things in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV back on the board. So far, doing pretty good. So far, S&P futures. We had the market.
So far, you're already grading her one opening into the show. Huh?
I was educating her on the way in. Dow futures down 109.
Be nice to my friend,
AV. I always am. She's the best. S&P futures down 10. Nasdaq futures down 20. She actually was telling me something we should listen to. You can't find news around the world as much as used to be able to, it seems to me, anyway, but AV was talking this morning about the voter fraud in Russia, which she actually should tell us about, Kevin, because it's pretty darn interesting. And I said, well, it sounds like Chicago. Because really, Chicago's like that? I go, yeah, back in the day, I said, did you ever hear the Chicago election motto? She goes, no. Vote early, vote often. She goes, God, that's terrible.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it's happening here in Chicago.
See, believe it, you know. You never heard that. Well, see, I never saw anyone. Now she's got a new line. Vote early, vote often.
There's people who still believe that that the 1960 election of John Kennedy was put over the top by lots of dead people.
Yep. I had a friend, still have a friend, and she is was an election judge. And remember, how many elections ago, Kevin, who was the guy that ended up being the head of the school board? He was on the county board. He ran against somebody. He ran against Stroger's kid or something. What the hell was the guy's name? Weirdo. And they ended up being head of the school board. And after the the election, he had a group of demonstrators, and he wanted to go down to the county board and look at the ballots and something. And I'm thinking, what kind of a nut job is this guy? Well, it turns out, I talked to this lady afterward, and she'd been an election judge forever. And she said, yeah, what we used to do is, that's why you're always late as an election judge. This is going back, 10 years. But she says, they would bring the absentee ballots from your precinct in, and you would count them in the precinct. All of a sudden, they said, oh, no, we're going to take all the absentee ballots, and we're just going to send them down to the county building. And he wanted to see him before he said he was out. He lost.
Want to ride with him.
Yeah.
I'd want to see him packed, and I want to ride downtown him then.
Well, that's why, you talk to the Maddie Webbers of the world, and obviously, I'm getting more and more in the middle here, Kevin. It seems like I'm fighting with the left as much as I'm fighting with the right these days. But, when they say, well, why shouldn't you have mail-in ballots? I go, wait a minute. There's somewhat of a discipline in getting off your fanny and walking down the block, walking in, having your, well, you don't necessarily need an ID, but you need a signature. Somebody looking at you, you're there. There's a certain discipline to that. Mailing stuff in, like, AV, what did you say they were doing in Russia this morning?
Well, the constitutional changes were like a week ago or so, but it's like a bunch of videos showing like people coming to vote, but they're checking in on the list, and they're saying they already voted, but they didn't, and it's just such a mess.
Well, I mean, how could that possibly happen with mail-in ballots, Kevin, right? Oh, no, you can't.
Well, and you get all kinds of things. You know, you get ballot harvesting, which can be a problem. You get, there's just so much. And of course, it's not like we don't have the ability to do mail-ins now, but there's a process behind it for casting an absentee ballot. It's a little bit different when you send out a ballot to everybody and say, go ahead and mark it and send it back. You've not requested the ballot, and there's really not a great tracking mechanism for it. And we already know that the voter rolls are full of people who have moved, who have relocated, even people who've died. And so now you're going to drop a ballot in the mailbox, and you're going to expect nobody in the world to actually open that envelope, complete the ballot, and return it.
Right.
We have a process. We should use that process, and for people who don't feel that they can go out. But we also, the other thing we have is we have early voting. In virtually every state, and it goes anywhere, you know, it goes as much as 6 weeks out, I think. So that if you're afraid of being out with the crowd on election day, you just go over on a, you know, go over 2 weeks early, when it's not crowded, and you can cast your vote that way. My final thought on that is we're gonna hastily pull this off, because government acting hastily always works out well, doesn't it?
This is interesting. I'm just reading a headline here from Joe Biden, who somehow came out from under Iraq yesterday. Says, investors don't need me, calls for end of era of shareholder capitalism. Kevin, Angelica, I need to get Joe on the show. This is my concern. I have nothing bad to say, honestly, against Joe as a person. Why do all these people... We're either being led by the very old or the very young, who thinks they have the world all by the tail and get it all figured out. Either by demonstrating, pulling statues down, pulling this, pulling that. Somehow, where is our 50 to 65-year-old class that should know that? I mean, this is one of our probably the most liberal person who's on the show is Professor Eric May. He's more centered than Frank, I think, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to tell. But does Joe think that the shareholder capitalism is a problem, though, Kevin? Does anybody?
Well, I don't know that it's become part of the platform. I know it hasn't become part of the platform because it's too soon for that. But he had working teams from his campaign working with Bernie Sanders to come up with a platform, basically. So it's kind of, it's funny, but it's not, that the Democratic Party was so scared that Sanders would win that they arm-twisted everybody who was still in the race on Super Tuesday to drop, so that Biden could have his path cleared for winning. I know this because I know some people who were involved in the Buttigieg campaign, and they said specifically that it was Democratic power broker after power broker after power broker saying you need to get out, you need to get out now. So they forced him out because they didn't want Sanders to win, because they knew nobody would want to vote for that platform. And now what has the Biden campaign done is they've gone and embraced a whole lot of the Bernie Sanders platform, which is that's why you're seeing that quote. It's one of those talking points that are emerging from it.
Right. So there's two guys. There's two guys, and God, I don't want to. All right, I'm not politically correct. It's two fossils that have no idea what Eric brought out 8 years ago on the show. Anybody who thinks shareholders are in charge right now is out of their mind, Kevin. Is out of their mind. Does anybody think that Jeff Bezos or Zuckerberg or any of those people give a rat's fanny what the shareholders do? And look at Google. The guy at Google is, when they brought the stock out public, what'd they do? They got two shares of stock and nobody gets to vote, right? Except him. Damn near. I mean, does anybody think that the shareholders have any kind of say at Commonwealth Edison?
If anything, we need a return to shareholders.
That's exactly right. If anything, we need a return to there. These people, I mean, you can't get somebody on the board of one of these, unless somebody's female or black or something, you put them on there and they don't, do you think you put somebody there that diversity is going to help fight Zuckerberg or Bezos, what they want to do? Just another yes vote. All it is. I don't know.
And it's interesting that you mentioned people. I don't know where their corporations are based, but California actually enacted a law that gives quotas for having women on the board. And I don't remember if it has minorities or not. I know it requires a certain number of women based on the size of the board and the size of the company.
Well, I guess in one sense it's fair if you're going to have 20 rubber stamp goofball votes. That some percentage of them be women or minority, because you're not doing anything anyway. I guess that's fair, Kevin. But you're not getting any place in terms of governance, are you?
No, I mean you're not.
But I mean,
you also mentioned you know, the people, the governance of by people who are want to, you know, tear down statues and such. That's a whole different issue, and you know, I really it's. Let me see. How's the best way I want to say this? It's really a pursuit of socialism, and one of the things that you have to remember is that if you really need to, if you want to replace an existing government, an existing style of government, and I'm not talking about the actual as is as much as the philosophy of a capitalist system. Because we know how that's been violated in many cases. But if you want to replace something, the first thing you have to do is invalidate the status quo, and that's really what we're seeing happen here. Is we're saying the status quo is immoral, amoral, whatever, you know, however you want to describe it, and we're, you know, so it's corrupt and it needs to be replaced. That's the message being delivered. And that's, you know, that's just an important step along the way if you want to change, if you want to go to a socialist model. That's how you do it, is you make the existing status quo just seem awful and in need of replacement. That's the approach. And you know, you see that, you know, it's important, for example, to separate the idea that Black Lives Matter, because of course Black Lives Matter, and then the Black Lives Matter organization, and if you just go on their website and see what they believe, hardly any of it is about Black Lives Mattering or the police or anything like that. It is as Patrice Cullors, who's one of the co-founders, said, she referred to herself and Alicia Garza, another co-founder, and she said, myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. That's what they want. On the website where it says what we believe, it says we disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another.
How's that working on Englewood?
This is where they want to take it, and what they've done is, one is they've co-opted the notion of Black Lives Matter, because who on earth is going to say no, they don't? You know, it's like passing the Patriot Act. You know, if we label it properly, we'll get more support for it. But it's also seizing that moment to push a broader agenda in the name of protesting one specific type of problem.
Well, I think some of the history of this, and I'm not a constitutional law history, meaning we had Lou on yesterday, and he obviously knows more about this than I ever, he's forgotten more than I ever knew, but I don't see, some of it is just kind of an extension, I think, Kevin. Whenever we always talked about the different generations, and there was obviously the Depression generation, and all you cared about was getting your next meal, right? I mean, it was pretty bad. Then you went from there into fighting a war, and then pretty much into fighting another war, and then it was putting families together, and the people who survived, you know, did a pretty good job for a generation, but everybody worked pretty hard, you didn't have a whole lot of time to do anything other than work and maybe play some softball and bowl. That was about it. If you were really good, you had a bass boat for Saturday, right? In the next generation, people always said this is like the me generation. I mean, if you were it's been so long since I looked at any of the Freud stuff. They never got out of what's the one stage when you're like a baby? Every time you poop or want to eat, all you do is cry, and somebody makes it happen for you. You know, basically, old people always rag on younger people, but some of the stuff I see, and Manny Weber has matured dramatically, but even he'll wing a whole. Like, oh no, what do we gotta try that guy for? Everybody knows he's guilty. No, Maddie, it's been 500 years of people dying for a process that you don't just get to kill somebody or convict them without them having a defense. Even Jack the Ripper gets a defense. What for? Why should we do that? We all know that. We don't all know. We'll know after the trial, right? I think some of these things are kind of a waste of time. But the alternative, and when people come out, what they're doing now, Kevin, you're right. They're everything is being torn down. I have not seen one solution anywhere other than give certain people more money of other people's money. I mean, that's the economic driver to this is from a lot of the people in the quote white community that really I don't think have a whole lot of shall we say. They're not into thinking anybody else is any different or any less of a human. They're just tired of paying, Kevin. They're just tired of paying. They look at a slew of programs from Lyndon Johnson on down and how much money goes into various areas. Now, of course, they forget the part about how much goes into the white areas and in the welfare that goes to the rich, which is dramatic. I mean, whenever I have that argument with people that are rich, I'm telling you, Kevin, it's lonely in the middle. Because it's getting to the point where both sides are so skewed that neither one of them, they're so far away from any kind of solution. I mean, it's almost like you could argue with either one of them. The fact is, an awful lot of welfare goes to the rich, and they'll never once admit that, right? The rich are the ones that are getting the knee replacements and hip replacements on Medicare at age 80. That's not happening out of the black and Hispanic communities. First of all, they don't make it to 80, right, most of them, and they would never think of going in and getting all these replacements. So, I mean, what I'm saying, the amount of money that pours into the welfare that goes to the rich is dramatic, you know. But having said that, they look at the Chicago school system and it's an open cesspool for cash. And yet, you put people on TV that can't even speak and they can't write, they can't go to college and don't seem to have any grasp of, certainly of civics or of any sort of mathematical skills and a lot of them are unemployable. Now, of course, underneath that ridiculous facade, there's some really good schools in some really bad neighborhoods that somehow manage to do the job correctly. And instead of saying, okay, these places are part of the solution, there are solutions here, most of the people, all they want to do is grab money. I mean, the teachers just want more cash. They don't really care if the building stays open later in the night so the parents, maybe they can learn something too. I have a whole, like, 10-step plan growing up close to those kinds of neighborhoods and working my whole life. I have a whole 10-step plan that I think would help out, Kevin. Nobody wants to hear me. We don't hear any of that stuff. Just
well,
more money and more work.
To take it further, not only do you have these effective models that exist in some places, but when you if you want to implement that more, you get resistance.
Oh yeah,
because there you get resistance from everybody who's invested in the status quo.
Well, but right now we have people getting paid to stay home, sit on their fat ass at home, and yet why don't we open Tilden Tech, why don't we open Lane Tech, why don't we open CVS, those places that have all these facilities for teaching people, skills, and open up for the adults on weekends and nights. The money's there. If somebody is sending somebody a check, hey, you got to come out on Saturday and teach adults. I'm not going to do that. Well, then fine, I'm cutting your check. Yesterday I was almost, it's a good thing I don't have a gun, Kevin. I would be the Elvis Presley. I can't sing, but, would he always want to shoot the TV when Robert Goulet was on there? I never quite got the story why he didn't like Robert Goulet so much, but he would shoot the TV, which not so good. But the string of professors and the people in the education stream yesterday, some guy on there talking about you can't open any schools unless you can guarantee that not one teacher or not one kid is going to be affected, not one person is going to die. You can't open the stuff, and you got to like keep paying us. And I'm thinking, who let this buffoon on TV? Who let this since when can we guarantee safety to anybody? Much less for a germ, for God's sake. And everybody's, just crying a blue streak about this, people getting 60,000 new people got the COVID. Well, first of all, if the 60,000 are nursing home, that's a problem. If there's 60,000 30-year-old people in Phoenix, in 2 weeks, there's 60,000 more people that aren't a problem. Right.
That's correct.
Now what? I mean, where is? I'm at a point now is people totally rag on Trump. They rag on Pritzker, rag on Lori, all rightfully so. I don't see, given people's views on this, Kevin, right now, the extremes. I don't see how you could drop the Holy Ghost in the middle here and say, "Here's my 6-point plan. We're going to do it," and everybody say, "That makes sense. Let's go forward." I don't think there is a plan that people will sign up for it. It somehow is in the middle here. For me, you got to open these schools. And if you're a 65-year-old teacher and you want to go there, stay home and get somebody else who will. I mean, you can't tell me. I went all over the place yesterday on the internet. I can't even. I don't see anything that tells me how contagious or how dangerous it is for an 8-year-old kid. Now, someplace, somewhere, I know, in bottom Iowa, there's going to be some place where some kid gets it at age 7 and he dies, and it's going to be my fault. You know what, Kevin? People die all the time. I mean, I got to believe that when we were kids and we all had measles, if you had the capability of Twitter, which, God, I'm glad we didn't have, and all this other stuff, I'm sure there would have been some kid in some neighborhood who had a bad reaction, and his mother didn't take care of him right, and he didn't get the doctor right, and something happened bad happened to him. I know that happens. Nothing's ever 100%. But why all of a sudden do people think it is? Oh, no, if you can't guarantee me safety, I can't go to work, and you got to pay me. Meanwhile, Kevin, we have a Federal Reserve pouring money into the place, which is essentially throwing salve on every wound. And now, I know more people have got fired forever this week than probably at any time during the thing. And you know what? It's even
worse. Because all we had to do was wait for the deadline to expire, to pass.
Did you, I don't know, expect you to look at it. Maddie was here. He'll do it on Monday. I don't know if he might already send it out. He sent out the, one of my, listeners, or our listeners, and, actually one of my clients, sent me a list of all the people that got money in Illinois. And it only goes down to $150,000. So if you got less than that, you're not on the Grim Reaper sheet.
You're not on the shame list or whatever.
Yeah. Guess how many businesses got over $150,000 in the state of Illinois?
You used that number just the other day. What is it?
It's like 27,000. It's unbelievable. There's got to be another almost that many under 150, wouldn't you think?
Oh, probably more.
And yet, and here's the weird part. Everybody has been texting me and emailing me, got to look at this guy. You know, he runs this thing. They never closed, you know, blah, blah, blah. They actually been doing pretty good. They're a garbage company or something. And I don't understand why the rest of the world doesn't understand that the government is just throwing this money out there. But here's the kicker, Kevin. I think the PPP, with all its, you know what I was surprised is I went through page to page. There's all kinds of places that when they filled, whatever they filled out, I don't know if they're filling out the thing to get it forgiven or what, admit they retain no jobs. I was doing a show the other morning. I just caught the bare end of it as it was during the show. CNBC, I think they said 50,000 businesses got money in the PPP, and they admit they're retaining no jobs after June 30th. So, of course, that was
so
the time.
All it was a conduit for an unemployment check.
Well, no, it was the original idea. And St. Patrick's Day, we're going to be closed till the end of March. Then it's going to be the end of April. And then these guys come out and said, we're going to give it another 8 weeks, and by that time, everything will be fine. Everything's good by the end of June. And it turns out, nothing's good by the end of June. So just what I said was the danger here, not just me, a lot of people, when they came out with this, this is all designed for a 30-day or 60-day problem. And yet, as the problem got bigger, and everybody said, no, if I have any chance of being an elevator with somebody else, you know, blah, 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 I'm not going back to work. By the way, keep sending me my check. All of a sudden, we got into this absolute cesspool here, Kevin. We can't break out of this until we stop paying people for staying home. I mean, I'm not saying anybody should go to work and get sick. What I'm saying is we're not going to break out of it until we stop paying people for staying home, especially government employees. And I just know that because that's human being. And if you're going to pay somebody twice as much to stay home as to work, guess what? They're going to feel unsafe going to work. They feel safe at home getting the check. That's just the way people are. It's not an indictment. It's not anything. But that's no solution. So now here we are past June.
But no, it's predictable.
You get
exactly what your reward.
Yeah, if you were to say
you get the behavior that you pay to get.
One of the best classes I ever took at University of Chicago was kind of an advanced cost accounting class. And part of it, for probably 3 or 4 weeks out of the 12, was designing compensation packages and how you try and design monetary rewards, read paychecks, or whatever you want to call it, to maneuver people's behavior in a way that you want them to do. When I say that, I'm not talking about, doing anything untoward. I'm saying if you want a CEO to look at the long-term views of the company, plus not totally dissuade the short-term views, to put all that together into a financial package is incredibly difficult. And what people would do, people would come in with one, and he'd pick one out from class, and he'd put it up on a board back when he had a board. You know, people would write it up, and all of a sudden, every hand would go up, that's not going to work. Looks to me like in year four, the guy's going to leave and go somewhere else and take his bonus, because instead of having the bonus, you know, for 90 days, somebody said, well, let's have it 3 years or 4 years or something. And all everybody did was poke holes in it. I don't know if there was ever one perfect, Kevin, or surely wasn't one of mine.
I mean, there wasn't a story about a place I worked, a bank where I worked, and it was a great place to work. But they had hired, some consultants way back before I joined on.
McKinsey or something like that?
That designed a comp plan for the whole, an incentive plan for the whole organization built around the key performance indicators for the bank. And nobody understood it. Rank and file, nobody understood it. It did nothing to direct behavior. And finally, I remember sitting in a meeting with the CEO, and he said, well, how about we do this? If we have a good quarter, we'll send everybody a check. If we have a bad quarter, we won't send everybody a check, and either way, we'll tell them why.
but then you run down to that's why you have pollution, okay, is because if you can pollute the river, then make money that quarter, everybody gets a bonus, and 30 years from now, when it costs you 10 times as much to clean it up, you're not around for that, right?
And in this particular case, the bank was run by some really ethical people who would not have tolerated that, and that was always that kind of thing, that notion that there might be something that is unethical but better financially for the bank. If there was ever any thought about that, the correct answer was you do what's ethical, and if you don't, you're getting fired.
And those guys are all dead.
So it kind of worked out. Now that had a lot to do with the size of the bank.
All right, we got another break, Kevin. But that also
had a lot to do with a lot of factors in addition to just moving to a more simple model that people can understand.
S&P futures are down 9.25. NASDAQ futures down 15. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Starks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board, Angelika Vlasenko, with giving us the report from Russia. I like that. You already voted. Go back home. That is a new wrinkle, Kevin. I mean, here they just say you already voted. There's the ballot. Just saying, you know.
It says right here you voted.
Yeah, okay.
Sounds like Russia.
Yeah. So, you think Trump's going to do the same thing? Have a constitutional thing where he stays in office forever? I don't think
so.
Why
do people keep bringing that up?
Because Putin just did it.
What indicator is that that's going to happen?
I
hear that about once a week.
I thought Obama might do it too, but because Putin just did it.
Well, yeah, it's Russia.
Well, looks like he already found his replacement as Kanye West. Russian Medvedev.
But his replacement, what year? 2025? When he's dead?
Well, we revised the song to say in the year 2525 if Putin is still alive?
Yeah, why not? Dow futures down 74. S&P futures down 975. NASDAQ futures down 16. Over in Europe, we've got what do you do, Kevin, if you've got the latest and greatest technology for all your quotes and everything, but for your email and show computer, you still got Windows 7. I'm not doing so hot with that.
That's a problem that you really ought to fix.
I got like 9 bazillion emails from clients.
I don't think Windows 7's getting, it's not getting security updates anymore, is it?
No, I don't really need anything in here, but still, I got all my stuff from the show and all the people, the bazillion emails. Anyway, the DAX up 95.7%, FTSE down 30, up 37.6%, CAC around up 34.7%. We're in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 238.1%. These guys have been up and down. Shanghai finally down 2% to 67 points. They've been up like 10% in the last 4 days. Hang Seng down 1.8%. We've got bonds. Actually, the bonds, the 10-year yield is down 0.58. The bonds are telling you a whole different story on what the economy is doing than if you look at the top six stocks. There's no doubt about that. Bund minus 0.47. Japan plus 0.02. We've got oil is down 49 cents, 39.14. It's below 40 for the first time in a few days. Brent down 45 cents, 41.90. Natural gas down 3 cents, 174. RBOB, 123. Gold, which has been the hero lately, it's now up 9.10, 18.12. Silver up 16 cents, 19.12. Copper up another penny. 285 copper has gone from probably 220 something about maybe 3 months ago to 285. A big move. Maybe, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, weather. I'm telling you, it's rain. Looks like it's raining.
Yeah, it's about to rain. It's 73 degrees in Chicago, and it's gloomy outside. We're expecting thunderstorms this morning. The afternoon becomes breezy and partially cloudy. Today also begins a stretch of cooler temperatures in the 80s for much of the area before heat returns midweek. The highest of the day is 84 and the low is 17. Phoenix, to see record-breaking temperatures above 115 degrees this weekend. Excessive heat warning remains in effect from 10 a.m. Friday to 8 p.m. Monday. The highest of today is 112 degrees and the lowest 19. And we have the accident reported with jackknifed semi near Irwin Park on the Adams outbound past Wilson. Traffic is slow off the Kennedy as a result. Chief, back to you.
So, Kevin, we have I'm getting, as the months go by, by the way, since you're on today, Big Ten just canceled all their non-conference games, right? So it's three.
Yeah,
for
that's right.
Is that three for the Irish?
And it looks like a bunch of other conferences will be going that way, too.
So what is the purpose of that?
So that they can delay the start of the season.
What's the point of delaying it a month when there's no consensus on what has to be there to start? What's the point? We just push it out a month. We're just stretching the pool. We got poor Frank Fahey doing his laps, and every time he gets near the edge of the pool, we pull the edge on him.
Actually, I want to see video of that.
Yeah. And what I mean, it's different to me if we say by October 15th, we think that we're going to have a herd mentality in this country of 60% of people are immune to it. And we're going to go forward, so let's push it to October 15th. Kevin, I don't care about the date. I don't care about the number. Somebody needs to make that statement, and come October 15th, you can't have 500 people whining about it should be 65 or 70%. Someday we're going to have to move on this. I don't see any, other than pushing everything off, whenever you get close, I don't see any action at all, do you?
What kind of action do you want to see?
I want to see that... If the Notre Dame football team and the Wisconsin football team go to practice and they give people some tests, I don't care if the whole damn team had it at some point. We have 70 people now that have had it in the last whatever. Tell me, why can't they go play football, Kevin? What's wrong with this?
Yeah, the Notre Dame team all tested negative. I don't know if they did the serology or if they just did the current test, but you know it's going to be big news when someone tests positive.
But it's
everybody's going to freak out.
But except for 20 year olds, it's not even the flu. Why can't people? We can't have this dialogue be totally dominated by people that are 70 years old and are scared bleepless.
Yeah, and the number is really, it's something like 73 or something like that. You know, that's where all of a sudden the statistics change. It's really, really, you know, as much as people love to scream that the data is what should be driving this, nobody uses the data.
Well, and the data is all over the place. People pick and choose the data. I mean, you can write an article, pick somebody's data, and have it by selective use of the data. You can make any argument, like you can in any case of any subject, right?
Yeah, and the point is exactly what I mentioned on Wednesday, that you go from data. Data needs to be organized and categorized and made into information, and then the information is the basis for some knowledge, and we stop at the data level.
Well, it's become
for public discourse. It's certainly from a media standpoint, they stop with data. That's all they have. There is no organization into information there. It just doesn't happen.
But when you slam people home, and people have been in lockdown for 12 weeks or however long it's been, their entire view of the world is on the boob tube, as my mother used to say. I mean, you're either picking one station or the other, and you're getting one side or the other, and that's where you are. I bumped into a couple of people because I met an attorney friend of mine the other night, and walking out. There's two people I know. One guy was a trader. No, he's not. It was years ago.
Yeah, trader is in T-R-A-D-E-R, to the country.
And the bartender, and they were, I don't know, I shouldn't have said a word. They just said, what are you doing? I mean, these people, God, look at all these kids in Arizona. I mean, look what they're doing. They're not staying home. I said, so what? They're 30 years old. In 2 weeks, they'll be fine. Yeah, but they're liable to affect somebody else. Maybe they're not. And somebody else should protect themselves. Man, I can't believe, Chief, what's gotten into you? What's the matter with you? Everybody's got to, like, really be afraid of this. I go, not everybody. Most people don't even bother. Why? I said, what if we were 25? How much would we? Oh, man, we would never have done anything stupid like this. Yeah, we would have.
Guaranteed
we would have. I mean, we're talking about something that doesn't, it's like a cold, I mean, to most people. And I know what you don't want it anywhere near a nursing home. You don't want it anywhere near my mother if she was still alive. I get all that. Plus, I don't want it. I'm not 25 either. But I mean, look, we gotta, as we learn, we have to be able to, and on one hand, but those people have the day. We're not, I mean, what's gonna, if the goal is zero chance, when's Harvard ever gonna reopen? Ever?
When people stop donating.
Probably. You know, I tell you what, Kevin, I have never been for this. When you talk about this thing with Biden says investors don't need me, calls for an end to the era of shareholder capitalism. You want to look at what happens when there are no shareholders? Look at these universities. Massive things of wealth with people making a fortune and no shareholders. They're like Commonwealth Edison. They don't care about their shareholders. I mean, it's all about this management class that you know, seems to run over the nonprofits. You look at some of these things from Illinois, and I'm not casting aspersions, but I guess I am. You wouldn't believe the amount of churches that are in there. Joe's Freedom Church, $200,000. Well, jobs retain none. What did Joe do with the $200,000, Kevin? I think I know where that $200,000 went. You think? I mean, what are we doing here? But this is, I mean,
yeah. It really is. We're in crazy times. You know, part of it is that how many times have you heard the phrase uttered, "We have to make sure this never happens again."
Yeah.
And this is over the years, and you can apply it to how many different situations. I mean, that has become a mentality, and it's folly. The notion that you can get to 100% guarantee is that is so infrequent. It is such a ridiculous goal sometimes. And not only that, is that the cost of being perfect is so high. Just even the cost of the attempt to be perfect is so high, and you still can't achieve it. You know, you use common sense. You do what's effective. You do what can move an indicator or move whatever it is you're measuring in the right direction. But this idea that we have to make sure something never happens again has now become so ingrained in how we think and what we expect government to do for us, that now has become translated in this situation, in the COVID-19 situation, into we have to make sure there are no cases so that nobody ever gets sick again.
Well, the thought of I understand that if you worked for Pullman and you got sick, they'd say, hey, stay home. They'd pay you for a couple of days. The thought of, I heard there was a sick person at work, I'm not coming in, send me my check. That would not have gone over too well, Kevin, I don't think.
Would not have passed the laugh test.
No. And now all of a sudden, stuff we never thought would. I mean, you know, if you get one of these professors, and there's been a bunch of mine, you can see I'm just kind of in my craw here. If one of these guys is getting a paycheck at Harvard or you name it, wherever the hell it is, and I spot that bleep on an airplane where he's closer to somebody, I'm firing him the next day. Because if he was that worried about people coming close to him, he wouldn't be on an airplane. He wouldn't be in a bar. He wouldn't be out of his house. And by the way, if he has a family, he wouldn't let the family in. So if I ever catch that guy closer than 6 feet to anybody, I'm firing him. Because he's asking me, because I can't guarantee somebody won't on campus won't walk by him, that he has to stay home and get paid. I want him to make sure, I want to make sure that in every other walk of life he's doing the same thing. Is that being too much of a bleep or no?
No, I think that would be reasonable.
But we're not going to do that.
Of course not.
Then the poor guy with the restaurants the other day, saying about how his restaurant, how they said he could open in California, so he hired all his people back, and went out and bought all his food and redid the whole place, so every table's 6 feet apart, and he's got sanitizer up the wazoo, and all of a sudden they say, oh, by the way, you can't open now. He goes, I flew out here in a plane, every seat was taken. Now, how is it that this can be? I mean, when the crown princess of hypocrisy has got to be Lori Lightfoot or Jay Pritzker. Well, you can't be in here, but you. By the way, go to the marijuana place. You're okay, but you can't go to church. Well, what? What are you doing? You can buy all the blue jeans you want at this store, but by the way, this one's got to close. Okay. I mean, I don't. But you know the weird part, Kevin, is I don't even in terms of money, which you can always count on politicians to be pretty good about money. How do you do everything in the world to make the world right for Amazon while you have the places paying property taxes closed? And yet you would never walk into an Amazon distribution facility and say these people are too close, shut it down. Is it because they want stuff coming to their front door and they don't care about the Amazon employees? Does anybody really care about when you go to some restaurant and you pick up the chow? Name me a kitchen in any major restaurant or any older restaurant, even worse, where people are 6 feet apart. Could it even be possible? No. Nobody cares as long as they get their dinner, right? So this whole thing is, to me, it's designed, I mean, when I say in Chicago, the idea that people should stay at home, are you trying to keep people away from you? Or what are you trying to do? To take all the people in the Hispanic community where they live in the same house, a couple of generations, not everybody, but pretty much there's more people living in a house than you would find in the North Shore, probably. You send all those people home. Does anybody care how many people got COVID in those homes? All I know is they didn't give it to me, right? I mean, there's amazing hypocrisy filtering through this whole thing. And the more people...
Yeah, the question is, how intentional is the hypocrisy, or is it just stupidity?
I'll answer that question. You grade me, Professor, another professor. I'm going to say that the first day you make a decision, okay, when you're maybe under the gun, when your hospitals are filling up on St. Patrick's Day, you make a decision, and all of a sudden it has unintended consequences. But when it's weeks later, and it's obvious to an Airedale that a couple of the unintended consequences have been not appropriate. You may not have intended them, but to not change them when you see them and adjust as you go, it's like me putting on a really long position somewhere for a client, and a year later, or 10 years later, it's obviously that stock's a dead dog, and yet I'm still in it. You know what I'm saying? It's
the notion of throwing good money after bad, yeah. And that is kind of what's happening, isn't it?
Well, the first time, of course, I don't know if Lori or Jay even talk to regular people, be honest with you. I mean, I have no idea who they hang with. The first time you weren't supposed to go to anybody's house. First time you heard somebody say, yeah, my usual mattress store was closed, so I went to Walmart and bought one, your ears got to perk up and say, well, that's not what I intended. I got to change this, right?
They don't.
They don't.
Because you would have to admit to have either been wrong or incomplete.
But you know what? Everybody who makes a decision is wrong or incomplete. I mean, on D-Day, the world's, you know, the day that we celebrate movie after movie, we had guys, I mean, I think most people know this, the cliffs that the guys practiced scaling and blah, 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 those big guns that were up there, and they landed those guys, and they went up those cliffs, and amazing feat of human whatever it is. They got to the top. Guess what, Kevin? The guns had been moved, 6 months before? They weren't even there. Yeah, nobody says, who was the buffoon who had the science on that, or what do you want to call it?
Yeah, who blamed Roosevelt?
Yeah, I mean, let's throw Roosevelt out of office. I mean, Ike, his trial run for D-Day, when he said use live ammo, and the Germans found out about it and sunk a bunch of the ships, he lost almost as many people in the exercise than he did on D-Day. In today's world, Ike would never, never have been able to be still in that job. After how many people did he lose? It was like a couple of thousand, wasn't it? And the live fire exercise for landing on a beach, was the Germans torpedoed a couple of ships, and because they found out about it. I mean, you would never have. Can you imagine that guy in front of somewhere today? Why'd you use live ammunition, you idiot? Those were our people. Yep. 6 months later, he's still the general, and there he goes. Then he becomes president for two terms. Right? I mean, you know, the notion that when something is that big or involved, for something not to go wrong somewhere, and for you, and the whole idea is to have constant feedback as to what's going wrong and adjust. Right? I mean, you don't end the football game with the same five plays you started it, do you? You do if you're
I wouldn't.
I mean, let's see, we ran the off tackle five times. These guys seem to be ready for it. Let's run the off tackle another five times, see if they think we're so stupid we won't do it 10 times in a row, right? I mean, whatever. So where does this leave teams like the Irish? How many Big Ten teams are we playing this year? Three or four?
There's at least a couple. What I understand is going to happen is they already have, if the ACC is probably going to do the same, they're going to go to a conference-only schedule. As a non-football member, Notre Dame is still committed to five games, and so they have those five games for sure that they'll play because of their affiliation with the ACC.
For sure.
But that the ACC, I've also read that the ACC is willing to cover a schedule for them. So, you know, they could probably arrange up to another, you know, I don't know, maybe three games or four games, something like that. This may just be a step towards canceling the whole season.
Kevin, I can only imagine the Big Ten commissioner, and not a reporter like you, but today's reporter. Geez, Harvard, in order to protect their players and their coaches, have canceled the season. Why won't you make that call? You don't care about your players or coaches? I can only imagine, Kevin.
Yeah, and the answer, of course, is I doubt that Harvard makes an awful lot of money off of football.
What do you think about Stanford?
This is really the issue, though, that they have to wrestle with. The revenue for athletics in general is so football skewed. I mean, some basketball programs are fueling the athletics budget, but not nearly to the degree that football does. So the money comes from football in many cases. I mean, the basketball conference that if football is canceled that stands to benefit from a budget standpoint is the Big East schools, because they don't have football, and so they have built athletics budgets around not having football, and so it won't be any big deal to them as long as they have a basketball schedule. Now, I've also, you know, read a lot about conferences are going to go to conference-only basketball, which means, you know, you might have a couple of games in early in November or December, but by and large, the conference season
January. What exact sense does that make?
Budgets are cutting back. Stanford just chopped a whole bunch of sports, period. And they've probably been wanting to do that for a long time, and now they just have a pretense for it.
Why exactly, Randolph, can 30 years ago Stanford have all these sports when I could find out what the tuition was at Stanford. I will for next Wednesday, Kevin. When the tuition was 20 grand, they were able to afford all these sports, and when the tuition's 75, they can't. The amount of money, if you looked at the people, I'll even look at Notre Dame as number one. You look at where the money goes? The amount of money that they pay to people to manage the endowment. What does Scott Malpass make? $3 million a year? Four?
Oh, yeah. He's one of the highest paid employees if not the highest.
I think he is the highest. So, I mean, this whole engine of these places, the overhead, is you know, how many people work in the endowment office? 100?
Well, and that's universities, Tom, is they are so bloated because all they ever have to do is just jack up tuition to cover the cost. And you know, I think you're going to see a lot of that change. You've had, you know, good conversations over the course of the week about the pressure it's putting on a lot of schools. We will probably walk out of this because those pressures existed anyway, and now they have just, now we have a catalyst for making them happen more quickly. I think we're going to see a lot of changes here.
Well, the Trump thing, which, you know, it's kind of a thinly veiled shot at schools not opening. But Eric is, but nobody knows more about this than Eric. He's correct. He said what the enrollment has been declining for a while, which is something to expect, I guess, because how many years ago did, like, one of the New Trier's close and one of the Lincoln Ways close? And the enrollment's been declining across the board for a while. Now you have this, but also, he said the amount of salve on the wound you got from foreign students, what is it, Kevin, $250,000 or $400,000 or some massive number. And, you know, and Illinois, University of Illinois, has managed to hang in there by having 11,000 fully paid for foreign students.
And you've also seen a lot of industries change what they really want, that they're hiring specific skills. They certainly want the soft skills too, but they're more intent on hiring skill sets than degrees. So if you can complete a program, like for instance my supply chain management program, it's 7 courses. You may not walk out with a degree, but you have what you need to thrive in manufacturing and warehousing businesses and in transportation businesses. You have the skills that you need. If you have an overlay of the soft skills and leadership skills on top of it, then you're perfectly fine. If you ever want to come back and be the plant manager or the VP of operations or whatever, then you may want to come back and get a degree. But you can on-ramp back into the educational system at that point. But otherwise, to be managers, supervisors, purchasing agents, and so on, you don't need that. What you need is some specific knowledge, and I think that's part of the change that you're seeing in universities. And most four-year institutions, that's not the way they operate. They've always looked down on that kind of a educational attainment level, and now it's starting to bite them.
Well, we got a dash here, Kevin, but as you know, I've always been somewhat on, not arguing on the other side of this argument, but I've always been on the other side. If the cost is what it ought to be, you should be able to go to Notre Dame and get an economics or sociology degree and still go run a fence company. It shouldn't be $250,000. I mean, if it was $40,000, like it ought to be. I mean, you talk to Eric, and I don't ever ask him how much he makes, but I'll say to Eric, in the last 15 years you've been there, what's happened to tuition? Well, it's like tripled. Is your salary tripled? He'll burst out laughing. Hopefully he's not drinking part of his beer. He'll spit it out. I mean, whenever you come to things like that from the economic side, you know you got a problem, which is a question of when. And maybe it takes a disease, maybe it takes something. But the problem, you're right, Kevin, is already there. SP Futures down 15 now.
Already existed, and now it's, we have a catalyst.
But when we paid at Notre Dame, I could have gone and got my economics degree and been a plumber. Who cared? I came out with no loans, nothing. I mean, and I came out learning something. So what if
that's part of the model, and that's part of a selling point that I have is you don't have to have loans,
right?
And if you chart a student coming out of high school and going through what we have to offer, and then going into the workplace, versus a student coming out of high school going to even IU, a state school, and but accumulating debt and then going into the workplace, it takes a long time for those lines to cross.
Oh, God, yeah. All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. Talk to you on Wednesday, if not before. SP Futures down 17. NASDAQ is down 44. We just dropped here a little bit. We'll be right back. Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. He's AV on the board. Do we have Mr. Carl Denninger with us?
You do.
We do. How are you, buddy?
I personally am doing great. The insanity that the media and political class have whipped up in this nation has reached an epidemic level.
How do we come back from it? I was just mentioning to Kevin if we put somehow if we, the Holy Ghost dropped in the middle. I, I'm at a point now, Carl, where I can't even. I'm the vilified man from either side. I used to.
Oh yeah, well, so am I. I mean, I've got the people on the left are, you know, I want to kill the grandmother.
Yeah.
And the people on the right are, oh, you know, well, you know, Trump is the savior of the world, and you know, and you're a prick because you go after him on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I can't win. I may as well just go buy a six pack and sit in the house and grill up some ribs and enjoy the company of my cat.
Yeah, I mean, it's really that. I was saying I got accosted by a couple of very left wingers the other night. And those guys used to love me. So much.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is fascinating. I put up a post last night on this. I've been working on it for a little while. And that is that if you remember when this whole thing really got out of control in the United States early on in you know, in April and late March, especially New York, New Jersey, and you know, and Illinois around Chicago too. One of the things that everybody excoriated was Sweden, because they didn't lock anything down. They didn't close the schools. They didn't do anything. They basically, their prime minister came out and said, "You are adults. We are an adult society. We are not children here. If you are at high risk, you know you're at high risk. Nobody else may, but you certainly do. You should take precautions. But we are not going to shut the economy down over something that we cannot physically control. It is stupid to do so, and we're not going to do it. Period. End of discussion." And here, oh my God, did everybody in the world go after him? The WHO went after him. Trump went after him. Everybody went after him. Okay, nobody stood back and said, you know, the guy's right. And yet, do you know how many people died in Sweden yesterday from coronavirus?
I have no idea. I will tell you this before I answer the question, which I shouldn't do. Everybody who watches various TV shows is convinced their numbers are way worse than the people who locked down. Everybody.
Well, I understand that, but you know what? You'd be wrong about that.
I understand
the number of people who died, the last, it actually may be, I didn't look this morning, so I don't know if it was updated yet. So I may be off by one day on this. The number of people who died of coronavirus in Sweden yesterday is one.
Yeah.
Okay, and by the way, their death rate in raw numbers, not in percentage of infections, but in raw numbers, has been falling like a stone for a month. As by the way, has ours.
Yep.
Now, the interesting thing about this is that on a per capita basis, you know, Sweden has had about 5,000 people die. They did the same stupid things that we did when it came to nursing homes. They let it rip through their nursing homes because they did not take care of the manual transmission route, as did not anybody else, which I've pointed out on the physics has to be the predominant way this thing spreads. Okay, I don't care what the WHO says. You can be a voodoo practitioner if you want, but the only thing that's going to happen if you go see a voodoo practitioner is you're going to have less money in your wallet.
Yeah, but Carl, you can't. As much as you know, you and I can be. You're better at this than me. You can't prove the negative. If some buffoon comes out and says, not a buffoon. I mean, the guy was a fluid engineer. If he comes out and says, if you're jogging and you sneeze and the wind is blowing this way and somebody's 40 feet away, is it possible that some minuscule droplet lands on the guy or is in front of him and he breathes it in? Well, the answer is yes.
But see, the problem is this: every respiratory virus, you have trillions of viruses and bacteria in your body right now. We all do.
Yeah.
Okay. Every time you go take a dump, you know, 5 trillion viruses get flushed down the toilet. Okay. That's just the way it is, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, if you did not have some of those bacteria, at least some of which are reliant on viruses in your body, you would not be alive because you couldn't digest food.
Did you, I shouldn't do this, but nobody's eating breakfast yet. Did you ever have an issue like a staph infection where they gave you a really, really serious antibiotic?
No, but I know people who have, and I know what it does.
It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Especially if they're not smart enough to give you like a yogurt or something with it.
Yeah, you get.
It's bad.
The thing that I don't understand about this is, you know, we've got all these people screaming about you know, RT-PCR tests, okay? And two things you have to understand about these kinds of tests. The first one is that under the best laboratory conditions, okay, that is, nobody handles anything except in an aseptic laboratory where people are wearing moon suits and everything else, okay? Which is where they test this kind of stuff because you can't get contamination when you're doing testing. Under those the best of conditions, those things only have a 2.9 accuracy rate, so they're 99%. And under field conditions, it's 1.5 nines, so 95. So if you test 100,000 people that you know do not have a disease with an RT-PCR test, you are going to claim that 5,000 of them do, and they do not. And then today, we call those people asymptomatic. They're not asymptomatic. They're not sick. They don't have it.
They don't have it.
Okay? Now, the other problem that you have, and they're never going to get symptoms because they don't have the bug. The other problem is the definition of sick, the definition is not, do you have a virus in your body? A virus that is in your body but does not cause a pathology, does not cause a disorder or a disease, is not a sickness. So if you get this virus, you are technically infected with this virus, but it does not cause a disease or disorder. That you're not ill. Okay, it's the end of the discussion.
By the way, No, it's not. The other night, when I was leaving this place, and I was the two people I got involved with. Don't you know we had 40,000 positive tests today? And I said, are they sick? What do you mean, are they sick? They're infected. I said, are they sick?
Well, right.
They got to be sick. No, they aren't. That's the problem. They aren't sick. That's why they don't care. Duh.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing. And then people say, well, but you could give it to somebody else. Okay.
Well, yeah,
here's another piece of information.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't understand this, you're a flat-out moron. Okay. When you get the injected polio vaccine, which is what we give everybody in the United States today, all right, when you get IPV, you can still be infected by polio. And in fact, you will secrete it in your feces. The reason we use the oral vaccine in third world nations is a high percentage of people in third world nations have not been vaccinated at all. And if you give people IPV, people will actually get polio from folks who don't get sick. So you yourself, many times after you get IPV, can get polio, but it doesn't produce disease. So who cares from your point of view, right? You've been vaccinated. You don't get sick. But you clinically had polio because you were excreting it in your feces.
I remember when I was, I'm not going to ask you your age, but when we got the polio shots, we were very young. And boy, my parents couldn't wait for people. I mean, that was the single biggest fear of every parent, for God's sake, back in the early 50s. And I remember getting the shots, you know, like a couple of times. They'd give them in the school. But then,
right,
as soon as the other vaccine came out, they want everybody to take that too.
That's the reason.
Yeah, that's the reason.
That because you still see, the thing is the oral one, because you eat it, basically, okay, you swallow it. It lodges and produces the response in your digestive system, so it tends to block the production of virons in your feces, even though you don't get clinically ill. And that is the reason. The reason they don't use oral alone is that the oral alone is a live attenuated virus, and in a small percentage of people, it actually gives them polio.
I thought it was the other way around.
The IPV is inactivated. It's not. It can't cause disease.
Because I thought the shot, you could actually give it. But that's why they gave it to everybody. The whole school got it, so there's nobody to give it to.
Well, yeah, no, that's the thing, is that if you have the shot, but you do not have the oral, you don't get sick, but you can excrete it.
Well, but, I mean, they were not. One was Salk, and the other one was Sabin years later. It wasn't like they were done together, right?
Correct. Yeah, there's it's two different technologies. One is inactivated, which is Salk, that's the injected. And the oral, though, is actually a live vaccine. And it is dangerous to some extent in that it's not very common. It's like 1 in 1 million people that get it will actually get polio instead of getting immunity. But, I mean, you know, if you get it, it's bad, right? So, I mean,
Carl, you obviously were not listening. You're not listening to CNBC yesterday. They must have had a string of professors on there from Harvard and other places. talking about if one person gets it, if we can't guarantee the safety of every student, every professor, we can't open schools. Oh, by the way, where's my check?
Well, yeah, you know, here's the thing that everybody has to keep in mind about this, okay? First off, Sweden won, we lost, okay, period. All right, their death rate among the population from this thing is 0.06%. Now, that would translate into, in the United States, about 160,000 dead people, and we've got about 130.
Which is about four times worse than a rough flu year.
About three times as bad as a moderate one.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing is, here's the other important piece of information that goes with this, which is that in 2018, in the first few months, 2018 was a fairly bad flu season, okay? But in the first few months of 2018, we had about 110,000 excess deaths over baseline.
Right.
By the end of the year, they were all gone. In other words, by the end of the year, 2018 was essentially a normal year in terms of excess mortality. Now, this year, and this is a chart that I post every week when we get the new weekly update out of the CDC, all-cause mortality. This year, I detected that we were headed for a below-baseline trend rate. All right, and I figured this out about 4 or 5 weeks ago. But it's hard to confirm immediately, and the reason is that deaths are slow to show up. It takes a couple of weeks before the government gets their hands on all the data. But, of course, counting corpses is pretty easy. It's nobody really likes it when you don't count them accurately.
Right.
So last week, we got confirmation of this. We are now materially below the normal baseline for this time of year. And what that means is that if this holds, and we won't know, we'll probably have a pretty good idea in September, and we'll know for sure around the end of January. But if this stands up, then all this means is that statistically speaking, all of the people that COVID killed were people that were going to die anyway within the next month or so.
I have a couple things. One is I sent you the thing yesterday. I get this tweet. I'm on this, coronavirus thing where they send me all this stuff. There was a young lady, researcher, and she is starting to go back through the numbers in November, December. And we started out with a bad flu season. But evidently it ended pretty early. And her point
But it wasn't
it,
flu. It was, that was COVID.
Well, no, but I guess it started in September, October. That was flu. But it ended pretty early. Now she's convinced that the November, December flu stuff really wasn't flu. It was already COVID.
Oh, it absolutely was. And here's the thing. So every year we have the CDC produces this graph. They call it the ILI graph, which is influenza-like illness. Okay. And every year a decent percentage of the people who show up at a doc's office or a hospital, generally speaking, if it's in flu season, they run an influenza A and B test on you. Okay, they stick a swab up your nose and test for that, assuming they can't find something else like strep or, you know, whatever have you. And every year, a significant percentage of those tests come back negative for both the bugs. All right, and this is why the CDC calls it influenza-like illness, because you got something, it has flu symptoms, but the test they give you for the flu is negative. So you have some kind of a viral infection. It is producing flu illness, but it is not the flu. And this last year, we had a spike in this that was right around the last couple weeks of November, the first couple weeks of December. It was a big spike.
I'm going to say,
and a lot of tests were negative, and I'm absolutely convinced that was COVID.
We probably have four contributors to the show and their significant others that were right in that loop. Okay, and one of the ladies has tested positive for the antibodies, but very weak,
right?
And the antibodies, but the and and uh, A couple of the others actually have gotten letters from their doctor saying, I didn't know what it was at the time. I want you to get an antibody test because I think it must have been COVID. So you're right. There was that spike. Now, where did that come from? Was that the first wave through from China before the second iteration came from Europe? Or when,
Back when this whole thing began, I did some reverse calculations because one of the things that when you get some kind of a novel bug, one of the first things they do is they start sequencing the genetic material, okay? And eventually you get overwhelmed to the point you could actually trace who the parent was of every infection if you had the time, money, and willingness to go back and you know, do the RNA analysis, okay? Because that's just how viruses work, is that it is obvious upon inspection, if you have an index case, you can tell that somebody is, you know, got infected from that person. And you can you also know approximately how many generations down the line they were. So the interesting thing about this is that when this hit Italy, they started running some of these DNA analysis and you know, running the genomes. And what they found was that there is no possible way that this thing originated in, you know, in late December, early January in Wuhan. That's impossible. That from a genetic analysis standpoint, they were, you know, many generations down the line from there. So I ran some back calculations, and this thing had to be in the United States at least by October of last year.
And which earlier, strain?
But there was no mathematical way for the numbers to work if that was not true.
Which strain? Or doesn't it matter?
It doesn't matter a lot. So there's two strains the two main strains, and then a bunch of sub branches. The last time I looked at this closely was about a month and a half ago. There were over 100 different genomic sequences that had identifiable parents.
Okay.
So I mean, at this point, it's, you know, forget about it. All right. I mean, you'd have thousands. But you could take, if you ran everybody's virus that actually, you know, you actually collected virus from people and you ran this, you could actually build a very accurate model of who infected who and where it all came from and how. I mean, you could do all of this. Computers make it reasonable to do that kind of thing. However, the cost of running that analysis across, you know, however many people we've had infected is astronomical. Nobody's going to do it.
Carl, why, even at this juncture, when you have a bazillion, I'll say mini-gods, mayors, governors, presidents, senators, everybody is trying to make rules that don't seem to match very much, why even at this point, I mean, there's probably a few, I read about the one in Indiana, I've been talking about on the show for 8 weeks, why even tomorrow doesn't the mayor or the governor of Arizona say, hey, you bleeps in the other room, they don't do anything. I want you to random sample the name of 1,000 citizens, and by tomorrow I want them all tested. Whether it's a police car.
Well, they've done that.
I've only heard about one, and figure out just where we are with this thing. They've done that,
but there's two problems that we've learned about this, which is somewhat of an issue, and it's actually kind of a serious problem too, and that is that the first issue that you run into is that we knew back in February and March that there was cross immunity. Okay, so what they're giving people now is an antibody test, and the reason they're giving people an antibody test is because it's cheap. So if you want to do mass sampling of a population, you can reasonably do that. All right, I managed to get my hands on a handful of them, so I got 10. All right, and you do it much like a diabetic does. You need you need some blood, right, a little bit. And I ran one on myself right after I got them, and I was negative. And then just a couple weeks ago, I ran it again because, you know, we hear about all these asymptomatic infections, right? So, you know, I've been running around the community. I haven't been paying any attention to any of this BS about masks and this and that and everything. And, you know, maybe I pick up, well, I'm still negative. Okay, so there's a problem with that. That doesn't tell you the whole story, because we knew back in February and March that there was a significant amount of cross immunity in the population. And we knew that because we had two people cooped up in a 10 by 10 foot cabin on the Diamond Princess. One of them gets it pretty good. The other one, who's their wife or husband, doesn't get sick at all. Not only do they not get symptomatic, they test negative repeatedly for the actual virus. Well, that means they're immune.
okay? And we don't know why they're immune. Now, there is a way to know this, all right, and that is to run a T-cell analysis and see whether or not a person's T-cells react to the virus. Because if they do, you're immune. When you actually fight off the infection originally, it's your B-cells that do that. Your T-cells are what give you lasting immunity, all right? So the thing is that will tell you whether or not you have resistance to the virus, but it doesn't tell you why. And the problem with an antibody test is that an antibody test is specific to that antigen. So it's a
two-step process. If a person right now, you could either have had the COVID and have the antibodies, or you could have been immune in the first place because of these residual T cells. I read the same thing you sent me, by the way.
You got some other virus that your body fought off at some point in the past, and your body recognizes COVID as foreign and something to be fought off because it was previously exposed to something that has cross reactivity.
We have a break here, but does anybody have a clue what that other virus was or why some?
No.
Seemingly 40% of the population have this T cell. Thank God.
Guess is about 50.
Right, but thank God. Right? I mean.
Yeah. Well, but that changes everything in terms of what you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, when we come back from break, what do you speculate? It's a cold thing or something? I mean, it's got to be. Colds are close to this thing. SP Futures down.
Yeah. 18, about 20% of coronaviruses are from colds.
We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. He's Mr. Carl Denninger with us. SP Futures down 1450. Come back a little bit because the Producer Price Index, you believe this, I got a bridge for you. Down 0.2% versus an expected up 0.4%. NASDAQ Futures down 30. Dow Futures down 169. Over in Europe, we've got my Windows 7 machine is starting to gag here, Carl. I think I'm going to have to do something about this. I kept the one going even though I have all the real high-tech stuff for all the quotes and everything because I don't want to lose a quote. But I keep bumping this along because of the bazillion emails and stuff I have in there. By the way, I have a quote for you. This is a good one. And this reminds me of you when you get tired of the stuff you do. Never believe that a few caring people can't change the world. For indeed, that's all who ever have.
That's yeah, well... I don't know. I mean, where I live now, it's fascinating because the governor here in this state, went literally insane and turned around and delegated to the county level mayors.
Oh, God.
Power to do mask orders and things like this, right? So, of course, the county here, just slammed one on everybody starting this morning, actually, 12:01 a.m. on Friday. And the way it's put out is beyond stupid. All right, so here's the deal.
Hey, hold that thought. Wait, let me run through the rest of these countries, and then we'll
yeah, get yeah. To I'm it. Sorry.
The DAX up 58.4%, FTSE up 20.3%, CAC up 13.3%, so mildly positive over there. Asia, though, not the same way. If I ever get the same thing to work here. A.V., why don't you do a traffic, weather, sports. At least get done with that.
Good morning, friends. Happy Friday. It's 73 degrees in Chicago, and it's raining outside. Rain and showers are expected till noon. The afternoon becomes breezy and partially cloudy. Today also begins a stretch of cooler temperatures in the 80s for much of the area before heat returns midweek. The highest of the day should be 84 and the lowest 70 at night. And Arizona is on fire. Phoenix is experiencing record-breaking temperatures above 115 degrees this weekend. Excessive heat warning remains in effect from 10 a.m. Friday until 8 p.m. on Monday. The highest of today in Phoenix should be 112 degrees and the lowest is 90. And we have Huron Street between North LaSalle Street and Wells Street is closed after an accident that involved shooting. Also, Route 53...
An accident that involved shooting. How's that an accident?
Incident.
Oh, yeah, incident. Maybe. Incident, yeah. You know what? We're doing this about 3 days a week now, Carl. And Huron is between LaSalle... That's right where I lived. I was 70 West Huron, and that's got to be... It's got to be that building, for God's sake.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that I think is as I was saying is so fascinating about all this is that when you look at the actual data, okay, it was evident from the very beginning of this that the primary means of transmission was not coming out your nose; it's coming out your butt. And one of the reasons we knew this factually is that in Wuhan, one of the places where they had a massive outbreak was an apartment building where they had no traps in the sewers.
Oh, God.
Okay. So the sewer gas is coming up in your in your apartment through the sink, right?
That's just swell.
All right. And they had one index case, and this huge number of people that were 10 floors away got it. And it's like, okay, that's not possible from aerosol.
One of my friends who's involved in a lot of nursing homes claimed that one guy who delivered people's food one night infected 40 people.
Well, yeah, because yeah. You know why? 40% of the people in nursing homes are incontinent.
Yeah. Well.
So the first guy gets it, okay, and then it's in his crap, and, you know, they're changing his adult diaper. They're not treating that as hazardous biological waste, but it is.
Right.
They're not treating themselves as being contaminated with hazardous biological waste, but they are.
Right.
And all of a sudden, everybody in the place has it.
Well, Kyle, let's come back to the T-cell thing, because let me ask a question. How my significant other, Audrey, who comes on the show once in a while, much as I love to give her grief, she's the best. Her dad, he died, I'm thinking, 98. But totally lucid to the last, you know, the last day, really. Carl, I had one of those amazing experiences. I mean, you know the book Freedom from Fear, William Kennedy?
Yeah.
Well, I was reading that book. You know, I loved it. I thought it was spectacular. But I was able to bounce everything in the book off her dad, who lived through all that.
Right.
And it was pretty fascinating, because I never had any idea until I read that book, all the machinations going on between the people that needed to produce stuff and people they wanted in the Army. And he said, oh, yeah. I said, you know, the story was, you know, everybody went and signed up and all volunteered for me in the Army. Well, that's all BS. Turns out they didn't want people to do that. They only wanted certain people, and everything was a draft. And her dad says, oh, yeah, the biggest crook in the city was the guy who ran the draft. You could pay him off. Anyway, whatever, she was acting like the daughter. Dad, you can't go out. And this is like when he's 94. You can't go out. You know, there's this cold going around. And he always called her Angel. Angel, let me tell you for about the 1,000th time. If there's been a cold or a flu, I've been all around the world. I was at Okinawa. I was in steerage on every ship. If there's a cold or flu, I've had it. I'm not worried about it.
Right.
He goes, there can't be one out there I haven't had. And you know what? The dude, his last 10 years, I don't think he ever had a cold or a flu, Carl.
Well, you know, that's part of the problem with all of this, is that we've been scared under our desks by a bunch of people that over a bug that 2 years ago we had a flu bug, an ordinary seasonal flu bug that killed two-thirds as many people as this thing has so far, all right? And the thing about that is that when we got to the end of the year, there was no excess death at all.
Right.
So, did it actually change the trajectory of anything statistic? Now, I mean, you know, for an individual person, yeah, it changed trajectories. There were plenty of people that died that, you know, that otherwise might not have at that time. But in terms of statistics, did it statistically change the trajectory of anything? The answer is no. And now we're seeing the same pattern here. And the other thing that I find fascinating about this is that, and you know, I've been on your show enough. You know I'm no fan of Barack Obama at all, okay, or anything that he did. But in 2009, there was a pandemic flu that got into the United States. He was urged strongly to, you know, start mitigation measures, blah, 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 blah. You know, good God, this could kill a million Americans, you know, yada, 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 yada. And he told everybody to go pound sand. He did nothing. Nobody heard anything about it. And yet, if you look at the data from 2009 and in the CDC data, it's very clearly there.
Oh, yeah, okay? Absolutely.
Now, here's the other interesting thing. 2 weeks ago, we were on the epidemic threshold for all-cause mortality from flu. So, in other words, so the CDC has a definition. When you get over a certain percentage of deaths caused by pneumonia and related diseases, then we consider ourselves to have a flu epidemic going on. Okay? So, because, you know, people die of all kinds of things all the time. When the percentage gets over a certain level, then we are an epidemic. And there is another level below that that's the baseline that they expect people to die of flu-like disease and pneumonias. And there's two bands with a little band in the middle. And in the middle is just kind of like, okay, we're kind of in the normal range. And about 2 weeks ago, we hit the upper edge of that confidence band, and we are now materially below it.
Carol,
the
I think this thing
one, we're below baseline.
I believe this thing took a lot of younger people out when they were putting people on ventilators and didn't know how to treat it. It should not have died.
Oh yeah, no. We knew that. Here's the thing. I've said for 2 months now, people ought to go to prison for this. That's manslaughter. We knew ventilators did not work out of China. We didn't know what might work, but we knew that didn't work. And for political reasons, not only did we encourage hospitals to do this, we actually paid them extra under Medicare's and Medicaid schedules if they put people on vents. So you had hospitals that were running around ventilating anybody who had an even mildly depressed oxygen saturation without any evidence that they were in distress, and they killed these people.
Well, is there any way to find out what the T-cell immunity is and research that, or no? It's just a mystery.
Well, there is, but it's very expensive. If you go and have an HIV test, they actually run two tests. The first one is an RT-PCR, and if you're positive on that, then they run a confirmatory test, which is quite accurate. Okay. Problem with the RT-PCR is the same problem we have with trying to use it for this, which is that it has a very high false positive rate, about 5%. And so, when AIDS first came out, we did not have a confirmatory test. We put a bunch of people on AZT. We killed them because they didn't actually have HIV, but we told them they did. Okay. Now, if the first one's positive, then they send the same sample out for the confirmatory test. That one's extremely accurate. However, it's also very expensive. And the problem with running a T-cell assay on individual people to try to figure out what's going on a population basis is that you need to challenge it specific. You need to challenge the samples with that specific virus, which we can do, but it's not cheap. And so there is a serious problem with trying to use it as a survey tool just because of the cost.
Okay.
It's insanely expensive. And then there's the other problem. You know, we're 3 months into this, and you know how, remember, we have supposedly, Abbott Labs has a little machine that gives you PCR test results in 15 minutes, right?
Doesn't work.
Do you know that, it doesn't work. Do you know that we now in Florida and even here in Tennessee, if you go and you get tested, you may not get a result back for 3 to 5 days?
Yeah, that's what it is here.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's what it is here.
We're three months into this and you can't tell me whether or not I'm positive
for
this
thing? The girl downstairs, she took a trip to Atlanta and she refused to leave her apartment. Didn't want to affect me or anybody in the building or in the neighborhood. Well, she just took the dog out in front. And she said, "Chief, I'm not gonna come out." She went and got a test and she was down there 5 days. They said, "You're fine." I got a question.
Yeah, but you know what the other problem is that there's you've got those delays, everything else. Well, guess what? What do you do during that time?
Well, she stayed in, so.
Well, I understand, yeah. But if you actually see, you can't use these kinds of tools against people who are not symptomatic. If you do not have symptoms, you're not sick. That's the end of the discussion.
Right. Well, all right, one more comment on this, and then I'm going to switch to the economy, because it's,
yeah.
I think at least as, well, not if you're dead, it's not as important, but one of my friends, and she's been on the show, she was a contributor until she had a baby, and one of her friends is one of the top pediatricians in the city. Well, somehow she volunteered to help COVID patients, and a terrific lady. Her reaction, Carl, she couldn't believe the people who were coming out of the Medicaid nursing homes in the city, the condition they were in. So I'm going to say I bet the people in Cleveland, Sweden are taking care of better nursing homes. The ones in these bad neighborhoods or old people just stuffed in these places. God, Carl, I can't imagine the compromised state half of them are in.
Yeah, you know what? Both of my grandparents on my father's side did the slow burn in those places. And I couldn't deal with it, but my parents, after that happened, both said, "We're dying in the house. We don't care why or what. We're not going there. We're dying in the house." And they both did.
Yeah, I don't. Let's shift gears to the economy. And it's almost like a tale of two worlds here, Carl. We've got the money that they're shipping people, so nominally these numbers have come out okay in retail sales and everything, but it's all just money that was printed and mailed to people, and not just mailed or given other places. And now all of a sudden you've got, I've heard of more people permanently laid off like in the last 5 days in July than like the whole time, you know, they were furloughed before, but now they're just saying you're not coming back, you're out. How much somewhere along the line, the winging out cash to people, I guess during a depression, if you just would have kept sending people money for 1 year, it worked in 1936. And of all the people on TV who talk about 1936, there isn't one of them that can tell you what exactly happened, except for probably you, Carl. Is when they
right.
Two things happened. They sent out the checks for people, their World War I bonuses, which they really had owed them for 20 years, and finally sent it to them. And the other was they decided people couldn't own gold, so they went out and bought
right.
it, and they bought it from them. So they actually injected cash into the economy for a few months, and we had a few good months, and some people thought we were home free, but we never were. It just was, you sent people checks, and nobody got jobs or anything, nothing really picked up. So now we're at this thing where we have this nominal stuff, but under the undercurrent, there was a guy on CNBC yesterday, how they ever let him on, I don't know. This older dude from some foundation, he goes, look at the undercurrent of this thing. People that have, anybody who's in a job that's a contract job is out. You don't have bands, you don't have cooks, you don't have carpenters, you have home remodeling going on, so some of that stuff's going on. You've got, refinancing going on, so that's going on. He goes, but these mid-level banks that loan to like regular people that are now all out of work and all these places are closed, they're not getting that money back. He goes,
right.
you know, he goes, the underpinnings of this, even though we're throwing money at the top and the nominal number looks good, because the underpinnings couldn't be worse. He goes,
that's the other thing too, is that the part of this that's, you know, political calculation is a big part of what's going on right now, of course. And the issue that you run into is that the PPP stuff, that prohibition on firing people is expiring, okay? And so what we're, you know, temporary furloughs, or we're going to hire you back, and, you know, whatever, that protection is gone. And so now what you've got is a situation where, you know, they just did this mask order down here, right? And they put it in, you know, the week after the 4th of July. Well, they were debating it last Friday, and I took a look around this area. I did a quick survey online on the reservation sites to see what the hotel occupancy looked like for the 4th of July weekend, which, you know, you'd think would be, basically they'd be slammed, right? I mean, you know,
yeah.
Tourist area. And there, out of all the different places that I looked at on the online sites, I would say less than 10% were actually full.
Well,
okay, wanted to come into town here and screw around on the 4th of July weekend, you could actually get a place to sleep on Friday night, which is crazy. All right, I mean, that's never, ever happened around here, ever before, ever, period. And, I mean, you'd be sleeping in your car. I don't care what year it is.
Well, the place,
this one.
Place
and then,
downtown here.
A couple days ago, I went down into town, and hey, you know, there's the places half of what it usually is.
Well, the places. I look at downtown Chicago, and there's a few more people, Carl, but none of the restaurants and bigger bars in these buildings have opened. Buildings are still
in. I'm just saying, we're running about 50%, okay, of where we ought to be for this time of year. How do you stay open?
Well, the place downstairs in our place, I mean, in our building, the bar reopened, okay? So we've met a few people down there a few times, and there's a couple others around. These are small places. These are not Ciri's Cafe, where with the outside can hold 300 people. This place could
right.
hold 40, and I think the rent, you know, I'm talking out of school, but let's say it's, I think it's like $15,000 a month, Carl.
Oh yeah,
we were in there the other night. We left at 6:15. When we left, there was nobody there. The building.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah, the building they're in. I think this is what I heard anecdotally, that 10 years ago their taxes were $80,000, and now they're like two something. Well, that's
the other problem
yeah.
that you have is that, you know, the tax, especially in the cities. Okay, I mean, around here, it's you know, that's not as bad. But the rest of them, that's a, you know, I mean, you get into the larger cities, that's a huge problem. And it's one of the things that I've pointed out to everybody is that if you really wanted to, you know, tell people basically, you know, cut the BS, okay, There's an easy way to do it. The first one is take the sinks in all commercial establishments, take them out of the bathrooms, put them in the hallway with a camera pointing at it and a monitor right over the front of the bar. So now your hand washing compliance will go from about 20% to 99.9% immediately because of the public shaming of anybody that comes out of a can and doesn't wash their hands. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. That right there would make a significant difference. The other thing is, if you really wanted to get aggressive, just IR temperature scan everybody that walks in the door.
Well, I guess we have to find a way. I mean, it looks to me, and that's why I want to talk to you about the economics of it. I mean, how much money they wing at people. I mean, it wasn't like the government during the Great Depression didn't have these same debates. They just said, okay, what if we send all this money out to people and it works for like a few months and then it doesn't and now we got all this money sloshing around. All we're going to create is inflation. The last thing these people need that aren't making any money is inflation on top of it. Now this time,
right.
This time we're not as smart. And we're winging it out there. I think that whoever, these two people that are running for president, I'm thinking at the latest, Carl, November, December, January, maybe October, even our buffoons that are doing the work for these guys in the Bureau of Labor Statistics and stuff, we're going to see some 2% and 3% and 4% months on a CPI, and the Fed is going to react like even they can't. They're going to, and all of a sudden, the federal government's going to be paying 4% on how many zillion trillion dollars they got out there, which is essentially going to bury the whole place.
Well, that's the problem with this. Is, the last time that I was on, we were talking about that basically the 1970s was a reactionary, was what happened after they went into repression during the 50s and 60s, okay? But people seem to think that you can get away with this kind of nonsense and what they're doing now on an indefinite basis when every piece of history, I don't care what country you look at, every place throughout history, the answer has been if you try this, the end result is that you get buried. Okay,
right.
Now exactly when you get buried, we're not completely sure, but you get buried.
Well, I mean, it took a while because it really started.
Yeah, well, of course, it always does.
But I'm going to say it started more with the Vietnam. Let's print some money and pay for the war.
Right.
And now we did that sort of with Iraq, didn't we? I mean Bush. You mean?
Yeah, and it's. I mean, but the thing is that war is one of those funny things in that when you have an existential crisis that's real. You can argue over why Pearl Harbor happened, but the fact of the matter is that the Japanese did bomb our stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. And so, at that point, you kind of wake up and say, okay, we need to go fighting. Regardless of who started what and why they did it, it doesn't really matter at that point. The bombs have fallen. The stuff got blown up. We need to go do something about that. But with Vietnam and before that, Korea, and then, of course, now Iraq, Afghanistan, yada, yada, it's all, quote-unquote, over there. All right?
Well, right. But
and so what we see is the economic, how much money does Lockheed Martin make off of this? How much money does, does Thiokol? I mean, go down the list, right?
Well, I guess the difference, and I'm struggling with this from an economic side. That's why I want to ask you on the air. You know, we have a couple more minutes. Everybody talks about our debt to GDP is higher now than any time since World War II. And the concern I have with that is that again is in World War II, that was the whole story, Carl. I think it was the whole story. Here, it's half the story. When I say half the story, there, the money that they spent, they went out, they paid people, and then they went out and borrowed the money essentially from the populace. So if you're a Milton Friedmanite, he would say there was no debt in the U.S. in 1946 or 7 because it was like you owing your wife $50. The Denninger household was flat, where the populace, the government owed the population money, but looking from out to in as a country that was just fought a war and kicked ass a couple places, the country was flat, net flat, basically. Now, two things have changed since then. One is 45%, it used to be over 50, of our debt is overseas. Now, that's a problem. And, by the way,
right,
we've decided instead of actually borrowing money for people, we're just printing it and the Federal Reserve's buying up the paper. I don't think that ever happened in World War II. It's a total...
The repression post-war did, but the thing is that the when you look at the magnitude of things, what you see in these patterns is the same thing that you see in so many others, which is that people seem to think that exponential series can go on forever. And we learned in the 1970s that doesn't work. And we had a really bad half a decade, and some would argue a whole decade, as a result of that. This time, we've done it at a scale that, makes the previous time look really stupidly small. But the biggest driver of it, and analytically, I mean, if I look at, defense budget as a percentage of, of the economy and things like this, the biggest driver of it is actually not defense and in the overseas expeditions, if you will. The biggest driver of it is Medicare. It's not Social Security. Everybody loves to lump those two together, but it isn't. It's Medicare. And that is the monster that's going to eat the game, especially when you got things like this going on with COVID, where, there's all kinds of gamesmanship going on there. I mean, the county website here says that if you died and you had a positive PCR test for COVID, if I got run over by a car, it's COVID death.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I mean,
and so, but that's because people are getting paid based on those ICD numbers. And so, what is this going to do to the budget, a year or two down? I had pegged 2024 as, as kind of nightmare scenario time frame. I think we're looking at it, imminently here over the next year or two.
I think we are, too. Why is it that very, very bright people, and I think the guys on TV are pretty bright, I mean, they're there and I'm here. How is it that when they talk about fiscal policy, Carl, there is no fiscal policy. If you go out and borrow $1 trillion and the Fed comes and buys it back the next day, I got news for you. It's not fiscal policy. That's monetary policy. How could it possibly be the other? The idea that that you're going to essentially go, but if you were to ask any citizen, should we just give Trump, I'll use it just him, and the government, the power to print money and just spend it? The answer would be no. That's exactly what they're doing.
Well, yeah, it's what they've been doing for a while too, I find it's infuriating that you have all these people going after Barack Obama was fabulous in this regard. He did the same blanket thing, right?
Well, not in the
do we really have a difference in political parties anymore?
Actually, we don't. Just who gets the money. Carl, thank you very much, buddy. Hopefully, maybe we'll even as early as next week. We'll talk. S&P futures, only down 2 now. NASDAQ futures up 4. Imagine that. NASDAQ every day. Got to buy that Apple and got to buy that Google. But back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't f***ing know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.